college football playoff rankings got everybody upset, as usual, including me. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Just very curious how far this Indiana thing is going to go. They're top five again, so that's not a change. Big Ten has four of the top five teams in the entire college football playoff, Perloff, but they've got this massive game coming up against Ohio State, and the idea that, oh, if you only lose by two touchdowns and not three, or some weird magical number is going to make any of this better or worse. To me, it's either a loss of any kind, and then you go to the rest of the resume. And quite frankly, Indiana doesn't have a great resume. So how, if they lose badly to Ohio State, how does that make them one of the top 12 teams in the country?
Well, we already saw Penn State lose to Ohio State. Why aren't you saying that about them? They haven't beaten anybody.
Well, Penn State lost to Ohio State by one score.
So, okay, so you're saying it's the strength of the loss.
And by the way, I'm not even up here caping for Penn State. Like, I don't think that they have a really great resume either. And again, it's not necessarily these teams' fault. It's not Texas's fault that they are not playing the creme de la creme of the SEC. It's not Indiana's fault that they are not playing all the best teams in the Big Ten. But it is the reality. So when you're asking Ward Manuel and these other guys to try to, and ladies, to try to come up with the top 12 teams, and they're telling you it's anywhere from resume to how many losses do you have, to eye test, to everything under the sun, apparently, is part of the criteria. I find that I think Indiana would fall short any other year.
I think you could pick apart all the Big Ten teams, yeah, including Oregon, by the way. Did Oregon against Wisconsin, did that look like a top 12 team in the country on Saturday?
Listen, I want to give a little grace to a team that is going on the road in a place that they don't ever play, and a team that got up for that game, and they escaped with a win. And Oregon, by the way, has already beat Ohio State, and they've already got other things on the resume that you could fall back
on. So, but if you start bringing in that road thing, then that changes the conversation, too. Because, like, Alabama's losses were on the road. Do you care about that? A lot of these teams have lost on the road, especially in the SEC. A lot of teams lose on the road. Does that mean that what happened to Georgia and Ole Miss doesn't count the same? Like, if you start opening that can of worms, then, again, you're going to have trouble. It's not as easy as you're making it sound.
855-212-4227 is the number to get involved. Let's go to somebody who lives and breathes this stuff every day, and that's Dennis Dodd of CBS. Senior writer, does a fantastic job. Dennis, thanks so much for the time today. How are you?
I am great. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Okay, so where do you fall on Indiana? Are you more with me? Are you more with Perloff? How strong is their case?
I've been all over Indiana all season. I just think it's a great story. Obviously, Kirk Cignetti, you know, Google me, I win, all that stuff. Now, what you're talking about is, you know, do they deserve the ranking? Do they deserve to be in? This isn't their fault. This is a product of conference realignment, this argument, not Indiana necessarily being 10. When you put 18 teams in one league and 16 in another at the top of the pyramid, you're going to have misses. With each of these leagues, talking about the SEC and Big Ten, miss over half their opponents in their league. I think it's 47% in one, 46 in the other. And the random draw is that, my alarm going off, the random draw is that Indiana had, you know, a better, easier schedule than some other teams. I lay back on the eye test for them. I think they're good because they lead the country in point differential. They're beating teams by 30 points a game. I think they're really good. Kurt Cignetti has taken basically a James Madison Sun Belt All-Star team, filled in with a former MAC, you know, Offensive Player of the Year, Curtis Rourke, and done wonders. Now, the big thing coming up this Saturday, and I think it's one of the biggest games of the year because of that, not because it's for the Big Ten, you know, chance to get in the Big Ten championship game, but I think Indiana's on the hook here. How close do they play this? If they get boat raced 49-7, we now enter the argument from our friends down south where you potentially got a team with three losses coming out of the SEC championship game going, look at the schedule we played, much tougher, can't even compare to Indiana. Indiana should be left out. And you've got a campaign machine, I don't have to tell you guys, that airs for what, 4 or 5 hours a day on its own network, pounding that drum. So I think it's fascinating how close Indiana plays. It'd be great if they won. It'd be a better story. But if they lose big, it's going to be a mess.
Dennis, isn't there a reality to what I assume you're talking about, ESPN or something, and saying the SEC? Do you really think Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, Indiana would be undefeated in the SEC?
I don't think that's the point. I think that's the system we're given. I think the Big Ten's down, absolutely, in comparison to the SEC. But it's almost like, well, that's not our problem. They've got six teams that legitimately not only can win the SEC, but can win a national championship. And it looks like two of those are going to be left out. You've got this mishmash of teams that have beat each other. Alabama's lost to Vandy, but they've beaten Georgia, which has beaten Tennessee. It's going to be very interesting because, yeah, they're deep. That's right. So let's do what Greg Sankey, the commissioner, has said for years. Let's just make it the 12 best. You know, if you have a problem with it, let's make it the 12 best. Then that accommodates all the SEC teams, all the Big Ten teams that deserve to be in, and frankly, all the Group of Five at Notre Dame.
Dennis Dodd is joining us. He's a national college football writer for CBS Sports. One last one on this Ohio State thing before we move on to the SEC and other things. We had a caller who called in earlier and asked this question, and I don't think we exactly knew the answer, which is, if Ohio State loses, how far do they fall?
Yeah, I don't think they drop out of the top 12. I heard that discussion. I mean, look, they're very, very good. Their offensive line is beat up now, and it's pretty beat up significantly. Their starting center just had an Achilles yesterday. They have problems on the left-hand side of the line. I think Will Howard is coming into his own. He was okay against Penn State. People want to make that some sort of inspirational, performance. But he did have, an interception. He did fumble before he got into the end zone. That was almost unforgivable. Good tackle, but he dropped the ball, and that turned into a turnover. But I still think they're one of the 12 best teams in the country. Those receivers are incredible. That defense is elite, top five in the country. I don't see how you drop them behind. You give Boise that spot or whoever. You don't drop them behind those guys.
Talking to Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, national college football writer. You know what team people are talking about could possibly drop out and feels weird? What if Texas loses to Texas A&M? Is there a chance that they find themselves outside of the 12?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. You've got, it's interesting. When the Pac-12 had, everybody had two losses, it was a terrible conference. The Big 12 is a mishmash this year. Oh, they're no good. But when everybody but two teams in the SEC has two losses, it's competitive. Well, let's call it what it is. Those teams leave themselves at risk of being left out. Again, I think Texas is very, very good. I think the teams that have played the most consistent this year, most consistent, I'm not necessarily the best, but the most consistent are Oregon and Indiana. I mentioned those six teams from the SEC. I don't think they'll be left out, but they leave themselves in the discussion because you're probably going to have a two-loss team playing for the SEC championship. I say probably, assuming that Texas is in there. You're probably going to have a two-loss team in there that has a great resume and may lose its third game, and it's going to make a compelling case to be in. As I tell people at this point, it's like, yeah, maybe could drop out. Yeah. But these rankings, they are what they are right now. You either win or you don't win in this 12-team playoff. And I think the stories are what you just mentioned. Oregon, Indiana, who gets that spot, the Boise State, the Group of Five spot, and does that team move over not only the Big 12, but maybe the ACC as well?
I was going to say the ACC definitely may have a gripe here of the haves and the have-nots of the Power Four, the ACC and the Big 12, and how many teams do they get in versus the Big 10 and the SEC. Speaking of the Big 12, so the Colorado Buffaloes now, I hate the term control your own destiny, but it does apply here, where if you win out, you're going to be in this thing. You're going to be in the Big 12 championship game. You'll be in the college football playoff. And obviously Deion Sanders and Shador and Travis Hunter is just like a star machine. That would be the biggest in college football. Dennis, what do you make of what do you make of Colorado being in this position, number one? And two, what do you make of now maybe a lot of people in the media trying to put Deion Sanders in other places like the Dallas Cowboys, et cetera?
I think that's natural because of the job he's done. And anybody who criticizes Deion in Colorado right now isn't watching the game. There was plenty of room for that last year when they fizzled out 4-8, the way he turned that roster over. But I heard him talking earlier this week about the haters. What haters? If you're hating on Deion Sanders right now as a coach, again, you're not watching the game. He has fulfilled his destiny to this point. 8-2, he's flipped the roster. They're in contention for a conference title, and by association, you know, the college football playoff and a national championship. He is coach of the best player in the country. He is coach of arguably the best quarterback in the draft. I don't see how you can say anything bad about him. I'm so jacked. I live here in Kansas City. I'm going to see that game, Kansas at Arrowhead. Think about this. The Heisman frontrunner playing in the home of the defending Super Bowl champ. A little bit of hype there. Kansas, with Kansas, by the way, with a heck of a chance to win. They've beaten two consecutive ranked teams, including BYU. But as far as Deion goes, yeah, I think that's natural. He's going to have to answer those questions. And I think he said something yesterday about it. But he's a hot property. I mean, you know, NFL, another coaching job in college. I think he's done a hell of a job.
You know, looking around the coaching landscape, Billy Napier got the vote of confidence in Florida, and they had a big win. Is he truly safe? Because we were surprised when that happened.
Yeah, no, he's safe. I mean, I think, if anything, that effort Saturday night against LSU with a backup quarterback, don't forget Graham Mertz is out for the season, for his career, actually, is out. DJ Lagway, they coached him up great. The defense was fantastic against LSU. That's another discussion point.
Well, I was going to say, what about Brian Kelly, too?
And Brian Kelly. And they played really, really hard, down a bunch of players against Georgia, talking about Florida. So he'll be back. And they can't afford it. They can't afford the upheaval. You know, give him another shot in the SEC. Yeah, BK, I mean, look, 10 wins at LSU isn't enough. And that's what he's done the last 2 years. And now you're sitting there at 6-4. Completely underachieving and getting into it with players, something's going to have to change there. And you add in the fact that they're in the running or have a commitment from the number one player prospect in the country, Bryce Underwood, a unique and great quarterback out of the Detroit area. They're going to have to wait for him next year as well.
Dennis Dodd with us, national college football writer, CBSSports.com. We're trying to unpack these college football playoff rankings and everything, you know, the coaching circle and carousel, I guess, is starting to heat up here a little bit. Dennis, do you think we're going to get a surprise firing, something we're not see coming? We also see Dan Lanning, Marcus Freeman, maybe getting some NFL attention. But any surprise firings on the horizon?
No, this is going to be one of the slowest and smallest coaching carousels in years. You already see, I think it's 8 now, a group of 5 coaches have been fired, which is kind of surprising. I don't know what they expect out of some of those coaches, because they're just going to get stuck more in a corner with this revenue sharing, the separation of leagues, the top two leagues. Kind of disappointed in that, actually, by those athletic directors. But no, I do not see a surprise. Sam Pittman looks like he's okay at Arkansas. There's no sense in getting rid of him after the way they played, disappointing against Texas. But, you know, if their guy, Rhett Lashley, is going to be there next year if they want him anyway. And I'm talking about the SMU head coach, who I think wants the job and I think would take it if offered. But you can't make a change if SMU's in the playoff and you're waiting for them into at least mid-December. So, no, I think it's going to be a very slow carousel.
All right, Dennis, today is Great Debate Wednesday here on the Maggie and Perloff Show. And we're having people call in. The biggest, most disappointing sporting event. We're getting a ton of college football, which I think speaks to the hype around some games. Do you have a nominee, most disappointing sporting event?
I'll give you a couple, because we in this society continually fall for these hyped fights, whether it's MMA or boxing. I thought the caller on the Spinks-Tyson fight was in 1988 was great. I'm from St. Louis. I remember the Spinks hype and the hype over that fight. And how many fights, MMA and boxing, have we spent good money after bad, paying for pay-per-view and the thing lasts 30 seconds or a minute and a half. There's a lot of them. All right, that being said, I made my case on that one. Maggie, I get your 42-14 Alabama over Notre Dame in 2012. Have we all forgotten just a couple of years ago, Georgia 65, you 7. Now, as a sports writer, I think a lot of us spent the time running up to the game trying to convince ourselves it would be close. But that was manifest what it was supposed to be. Georgia at the top of its game. TCU, a great story, but not quite there. And then the other part of that was right when SoFi opened. It was in LA, and it was one of the worst rainstorms I've ever seen in Southern California. It was raining sideways into the stadium. It's not a closed stadium. It's got a roof, but the sides are open, and people were slipping and falling and breaking bones, you know, going to ears, popcorn. And then after the game, I remember being on the field. What did they spend? $5 billion on that thing? It was leaking. the rain was coming through the roof. That wasn't supposed to be like that. So that was overhyped. That was overhyped. Stadium and game.
At least it wasn't sheet metal falling from the roof like Jerry World.
You did get a good Final Four that year. The Ohio State game was great.
Yeah, Ohio State.
You had two amazing games. That's how it works.
Yeah, that was great.
Do you think you'll have blowouts in the 12-team playoff? That was a thing people were worried about.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you go from three games to 11, there's going to be bound to be those. But there's so many storylines before we get there. I think some of these northern schools in the Big Ten can't wait for some of these schools in the SEC to have to play in weather in mid-December. You know, I've heard that whispered. Can't wait to get these teams up here to play them. How does the Big Ten and SEC perform? How do these on-campus games go? You know, we've got the January 1st. What is it? The January 1st games are quarterfinals. The Rose Bowl is a quarterfinal from now on, at least, you know, how it should be. And who gets left out? And I think the big thing people aren't talking about is there's a possibility here of one or two teams having to play four games to win a national championship, or at least play for it. Are we just forgetting these are college-age kids? Not all of them are Heisman Trophy winners. And the way this was sold to the presidents, I keep going back to this 4 years ago when I talked to some of the architects of this. You know what they told the presidents when they brought this up? That's like, what about these college athletes playing an NFL schedule? They took the average of all 11 games. In other words, four teams will play one game, right? In the first round, there'll be four losers, so they'll be out. So they took the average of games played by all these teams, and it ended up being like 1.2. No, that's not the point.
Yep.
The point is there's going to be wear and tear on these guys. Watch for this, guys. Watch for opt-outs in the playoff. And I'm talking about guys in the top 15 of the draft who have to make a decision between $30 million and maybe breaking an ankle. You may have to watch that.
Wow.
Can you imagine if Colorado got all the way into the college football playoff and all of a sudden Shador and Travis are like, we're not going to play. That would be so – talk about biggest disappointments ever. That might make our list.
Yeah, I think they're going to play. Let me be on record as that. But I think it's a decision they have to make.
Well, their dad's a coach, though. I mean, that one's right.
Travis Hunter. But again, the number one draft choice. I go back to Bryce Young.
Yeah.
You know, it's been in place. And actually it was. You know, number one is that I don't know what the slot is for number one. Is it $60 million, $30 million? I can't remember. But the agent and the family are sitting there going, you know, I guess we're going to play. And risk four games and try to come out of it healthy, because the upshot of this is the insurance these kids have. Yeah, you can get paid, but you ain't going to get paid $30 million. It's going to be more like $1 million, because I don't know if anybody out there knows insurance companies aren't in the business of writing checks necessarily. So there's a right there. All these guys have this bridge insurance. It pays off. You have to fight for it, but it's a percentage of what you would earn.
I thought you were going to say because of academics, because Abdul Carter has a big geology final and that he can't play four games. Are you worried about the GPAs, or is that not a concern?
I wrote something in April about that, like how we've just forgotten academics in this. And I talked to JT Daniels. Remember the quarterback?
Oh, yeah.
At four schools, USC, West Virginia, Rice. And he told me it didn't affect him, but the toughest thing was transferring credits. He transferred three times. And he said, well, like half of his credits didn't transfer, to the point that he had a really involved major at USC, and I forgot what it was. He ended up getting a degree at Georgia in psychology, which is nothing to sniff at. But at Rice, this is how good a student he was. He was on an MBA track at Rice. That was his eligibility. That's what he was doing. But I know a receiver at Arizona State who had to go from a complicated major to liberal arts when he got to Arizona State, because the credits don't transfer. Nobody's talking about that, because they're eligible. They're eligible.
Yeah. Well, Cam Rising is getting a PhD, I believe, right? Next year at Utah.
He will graduate as doctor. He better. Yeah. He's been on campus for so long.
He told me when I asked him before the season, remember how Utah all got trucks last year? Every player, their NIL deal. I said, at least you got that. And he goes, no, I got a decision to make. Like, I think he had a separate deal with Toyota, that he had a better car. That's how long it's been now.
Wow, it's a minivan, really, because he's in his mid-30s at this point, so he's going to need something pretty stable. No, kidding. Dennis Dodd, you can read him, national college football writer, CBS Sports. Dennis, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks,
Appreciate
Dennis.
That, yeah. And he's going to want something a little more, you know, affordable, something a little more practical.
I mean, actually, we are joking, but the wear and tear, especially head injuries for college football players, especially because, like, are they really taken care of afterward? That is not nothing.
Well, and the NFL money is still massive. You know, for the first rounders, it's still huge. And to be honest, if I'm a second round receiver, for example, I don't have that fifth year option. So the odds that I get to my second contract, I want to start when I get to the NFL, I want to start the clock so I can get my next contract.
Definitely.
And so there's a lot of reason for opt outs, even in 12 teams.
The counter argument, one thing, a lot of players at this level are all getting paid. So at least they're getting compensated for
something.
Yeah, I mean, these 12 schools getting pretty good money for at least, that's way better than it used to be.
855-212-4227. See you guys on the phones. Let's get to it. The great debate today. The greatest disappointments. The biggest disappointments in sports history. It's Maggie and Perloff. Don't move.
Back on the Maggie and Perloff show. Great debate. Wednesday. Most disappointing sporting event of all time. Feels like it's boxing and college football, which is funny because those are two pretty exciting events. I think the whole nature of this debate is you have to have hype. You can't disappoint if you don't have hype. And Jake Paul, Mike Tyson was the reason we're doing this. That had a lot of hype, and man, did it disappoint.
It did. People felt really like one got pulled over on them, too. This was more than just disappointing. You know, I picked Alabama beating Notre Dame in the national championship game. You know, no one thought that Notre Dame, like, mailed it in and that it wasn't on the level. Like, that's the one thing about boxing and these conspiracy theories is your mind can really go to some dark places. And I think the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson fight kind of launched that. But you mentioned a lot of boxing, a lot of college football. Our audience taking the time to point out my Buffalo Bills here. Bill is in Arizona, and I believe you're the third person to call about the Bills, Bill.
Yeah, hi, Maggie.
Hey.
This is my personal best one. Personal most disappointing one, I should say. The year after the Bills lost their fourth Super Bowl, the championship game, the Bills lost. I wanted them to win so they could go to the Super Bowl and lose one more game.
Oh, you wanted
to make
them
to lose five in a row.
You wanted, to make it
to
five.
Yeah, but what? So they didn't have a ring on five fingers. I'm a Cowboys fan. I did not want the Bills to lose and then not miss their opportunity to lose another game.
Wow. I mean, Bill, you're taking it more personally than I am.
Wait, who did they lose to that year? That was the Chargers year? Were the Bills even good at that point? Did they sort of fall apart?
Everyone was so sick of Buffalo at that point. But, Bill, that's inspired. I had not thought about the Bills losing to count for every finger on one hand.
That's
mean. That's mean.
That's mean, Bill.
That's what I wanted to do. Because I'm a Cowboys fan, and I just not want them to not have their five no rings.
Yeah. Thank you, Bill. I just want, for the record, it said on the call screener that that was supposed to be the Washington Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was a disappointing one because they should have beaten the Giants, or could have if the field goal went in.
Yeah.
And then they completely no-showed. And this is somebody who's gotten beaten by Joe Gibbs in every single playoff game the Eagles ever played. That was a Joe Gibbs special. By the way, 94, the Bills were 7-9, so that wasn't going to happen.
By the way, I'm saying the Bills didn't make the playoffs in 94.
I actually think Jim Kelly got hurt that year, if I'm not mistaken, but I'd have to really go back and remember that. But that was very inspired by Bill. That never even occurred to me that the Bills would lose another Super Bowl.
Well, and
four seems so painful. I've never even thought about five.
How'd they do in the Super Bowls after 93? Let me see. I'm looking here. looking. 13 seconds. Nothing happening. Nope. Maybe this year, though.
You skipped over a few things.
Like what?
Music City Miracle.
Oof. Oh, I know, but they haven't made the Super Bowl. Was my point.
Oh, okay.
The Music City Miracle, by the way, those were two really mediocre playoff teams.
Yeah, it was a wild card game, but still,
Rob Johnson.
Don't get Maggie started.
No, you just mixed up Rob Johnson and Doug Flutie.
I know. Flutie should have started. Rob Johnson started instead, and that was the issue.
Thank you.
Yeah, 13 seconds. That team would have probably won the Super Bowl. Not to rub it in, but don't you think that they would have had a really good shot?
Guaranteed.
Wait, who did Kansas City go to beat on that year? Was that the year?
That was the year that the Bengals played the Rams.
Oh, 2021. Right. So they could have beaten the Bengals. And then Rams game would have been tough.
How did this become all about the Bills? We're talking about disappointing of all time, guys.
Yeah, that's why.
You guys are the worst.
I mean, pick which one. That's the hard part. We could do a segment just on the Bills' most disappointing games.
Hey, You guys all suck. Kevin's in Oregon. Kevin, save me.
Yeah, okay. Hey, listen, this is a regional thing, but the 1983 Civil War game between Oregon and Oregon State. Now, let me set the stage. 1983 was the wettest on record in Eugene. The day the game was played in November, it rained so hard, water was rushing down the aisles onto the sideline, and everybody on the sideline was standing in several inches of water. The game featured 11 turnovers and 4 missed field goals. The Beavers were coached by that football genius, Joe Avezzano. The game ended up in a 0-0 tie and is now referred to as the Toilet Bowl.
Love it.
Way to land the plane there, Kevin, with the punctuation, the Toilet Bowl. We have heard that one before. Thank you. 4 missed field goals. You know, I was thinking about, this is where my brain went. I'm like, all right, if it was the wettest season, wettest, what do they say, in Eugene history? Mm-hmm. Is that mean, like, imagine how good the wine must have been that year? Does that mean it's good or bad in Oregon? No?
That's where your mind went, man?
Yeah.
Not mudslides, not the dangers that come with
drowning.
All that water.
What do you think the wine's for, EJ? It's to soothe all of that. I actually don't know if that would make sense, but no, you guys want to bring up all the times the Bills failed. Yeah, I'm going to think about alcohol.
Where did Scott Norwood go to college? Did he miss 4 field goals in an Oregon State game?
No.
By the way, according to this, Rich Brooks was the coach of that Oregon team, so they were awesome. Did they
no,
get
he was saying the other guy.
The other
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, like, it's amazing that a Rich Brooks, who was a kind of like, I think he was an offensive guru, scored 0 points in this game. It must have been really wet.
By the way, that other guy, yeah. Joe Avezzano, his overall record in college football was 6-47.
Wow.
And 2, because he has this tie, yeah. And apparently it tied before. Apparently, though, much better AFL coach. He was 17-13 in the AFL. Possible, not very good.
Man, how do you keep getting all those chances? What's that total?
6-47. He coached 5 seasons at Oregon, never won more than 2 games.
Oregon State.
Oregon State.
I mean, yeah. Oregon State, I'm sorry. And he never won more than 2 or more than 1 conference game in his entire time there.
Man.
First 3 years, never won a conference game.
Not to switch gears here for a second, but speaking of people who are mediocre / bad at their jobs, why are we not all trying to get hired by the Jets today? Just to do anything. They'll make you a millionaire, and you can just stink at your job.
What do you mean? Like who? Like Joe Douglas drafted Garrett Wilson. I don't know.
Douglas's record was atrocious.
But that's not his fault.
Robert Saleh was bad. Adam Gase was worse.
Yeah, but what's the common ingredient here? Those people or the franchise?
It doesn't matter. I'm saying, why aren't we trying to work there and we could get rich and you don't have to be good at your job? Normally, you have to be good at something to make millions of dollars. For the Jets, you don't even have to be.
That's how do you know those guys aren't good?
Is Adam Gase good?
No, I mean, yeah, but I honestly want Robert Saleh back in San Francisco bad.
As a head coach?
And no. Joe Douglas, I know you probably New York Jets fans think he's a joke, but I don't think that guy's a joke at all. He really did it. Like, he gets a lot of credit for building that Super Bowl Eagles team. He was a Ravens guy for...
Yeah, but he wasn't the top guy in those places. Eric DaCosta and Howie Roseman are making the final decisions. He was the final decision maker. He had 5.5 seasons.
Yeah, I think it's the Jets.
Well,
yeah, but either way, Maggie's plan, we win. Yeah. Like, we get the job, and if we do well, we do well New York. And if we lose, we get fired, and I get paid to be fired.
I don't know how to say this. I think those guys are better than us.
They're not.
Yeah, no, that's fine, but they have openings.
Robert Saleh is a better human being. That guy is super cool. I know he's not a good NFL head coach, but I don't think that we are attractive to the Jets. You guys are ripping Aaron Rodgers. Dude has 4 MVPs.
Why are we not attractive to the Jets? We learned yesterday that Woody Johnson is making decisions based on what's happening on the internet.
Right.
He's just like us.
We got to fool one old guy into employing us, and we win.
Yeah, I mean, the guy, I honestly just see this differently. I think these are good people who are getting sort of hamstrung by the franchise.
How would you know? It doesn't matter, they're all getting paid.
Right,
this is my point.
We're not doing the blame game. We just want to get paid.
Exactly.
That's all we want. We just want to get paid here.
Send in your resume.
Man, could I be their offensive coordinator? I think I might.
I think it's a bit, I don't like where you guys are going. Because I'm a Joe Douglas fan. Like, that dude has done a lot. He's a very, very smart person.
Okay, you want to defend Joe Douglas. Today is not the day to do it.
Why?
GM than him. They go, oh, man, we missed Joe Douglas. Bogus is a doofus.
If you're a Jets fan and you think Joe Douglas is the problem, then I got bad news for you.
Well, what about Zach Wilson? Whose decision was that? It wasn't Woody Johnson's.
By the way, Zach Wilson was going in the top 10. I mean, first of all, a guy has a cannon. Like, that was like.
What about Mekhi Becton?
He had Denzel Mims.
Elijah Mitchell. Elijah Moore, pardon me.
Yeah, I mean, what about Garrett Wilson? What about Sauce Gardner?
Now and the team sucks.
This team is awful.
Yeah, but this is.
You had one good draft out of five.
Do you really think, like, getting the right GM is going to fix this situation? If you do, yes. I'm sorry, dude.
No, because the reason why I'll say this is because I've seen the Jets, when they had better front office people, win. Not Super Bowls, but win. When Bill Parcells built the team, they won. When Mike Tannenbaum built the team with Rex Ryan, they won. It was short-lived, but you can win. What I've seen is 14 straight years of no playoffs. I Woody Johnson's the worst. I will say it here and I'll say it again. Sell the team, Woody.
Yeah, but he's not going to.
Right. But my thing is, but even with that, I just don't buy this idea that, oh, if you go to the Jets organization, you just can't do anything and Woody Johnson makes all the bad decisions, all the good decisions are your decisions. That doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand this Joe Douglas defense.
I don't either. Listen, everyone, you'd hope you'd have a couple good draft picks out of here, but there just haven't been nearly enough. What happened with Hassan Reddick? Mm. What happened with all of this stuff? It's just some of it's self-inflicted. A lot of the offensive line stuff has not worked out. The free agent stuff hasn't worked out. The best thing he did two good things. The Jamal Adams trade and the Sam Darnold trade. But now Sam looks like he's rebounded and found his niche. So
he did a really good job of compiling assets, and whatever happened in terms of why the assets they then used them on sucked, maybe that is a Jets thing, Pearl. Maybe that's fair.
Wait, also, dude, when the Jets signed Aaron Rodgers, you guys all said this is going to be a disaster. As I recall, that's not exactly how the conversations went.
I kept saying that if Aaron Rodgers plays the way he did in Green Bay, the Jets will suck, and that is exactly what
you
happened.
You weren't excited.
I must say what I said again. If Aaron Rodgers plays the way he played in Green Bay, this will not go well. That's exactly what I said.
Well, I think
Dude, you were so fired up for when that. Your most disappointing thing is his first game as a Jet. Were fired up just like everybody else.
He wouldn't play this bad. My point, though, is that it was on the table.
EJ did try to warn.
And by the way, Maggie, Devontae Adams came here. This was 3 weeks ago. You said Devontae Adams is going to turn this team around.
I thought so, too. But you know what? Here's the thing. That doesn't negate my original thesis, which is we should try to get hired by the Jets because you can be good or bad. It doesn't matter. You're going to get paid. And this is the guy to fool.
That
clearly.
I mean, like, he's probably listening to this show, Pearl. Like, he's totally probably taking three great ideas from you just now.
I think Joe Douglas is pretty good. I think he's a good personnel guy from everything I've heard. I think the franchise ruined
it. Worked with Joe. So
I think the franchise ruined this dude. Yeah. And they would ruin
us. And we want to be ruined by him, too. You're missing our point. It's a money grab.
He got a six-year deal. He got probably $40 million.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, ruin me.
You're missing the point.
Yeah.
I think you guys are missing the point that we're not Joe Douglas.
No, like,
that
it's guy our point. We can't miss it.
Proved a lot. Okay, Bogus, quickly, some headlines.
Headlines. Sponsor, Progressive Insurance. Protect your home and auto. Save when you bundle. Get a quote at progressive.com. It is all Kansas's fault for now. The Jayhawks gave BYU their first loss last weekend, dropping the Cougars from 6th to 14th in this week's CFP rankings. But BYU still leads the Big 12, so it gets a spot in the actual bracket at the expense of number 11, Tennessee. BYU would go to Ohio State in round one. There'd also be Notre Dame, Alabama, Penn State, Georgia, and Indiana Ole Miss. Number 12, Boise State, is the fourth highest ranked conference leader this week, so the Broncos would get a first round bye alongside Oregon, Texas, and Miami. The Pro Football Hall of Fame just released its 25 semifinalists for enshrinement next summer. There are six first-year candidates still alive: Luke Kuechly, Eli Manning, Terrell Suggs, Earl Thomas, Adam Vinatieri, and Marshall Yanda. This group eventually gets cut to 15. That's the group the voters actually consider during Super Bowl week. And I quote, Dalton Connects for three was heard around our newsroom this morning after Laker rookie Dalton Connect drilled 9 threes, scored 37 points in a 124-116 home win over the Jazz. He had 21 points in a 3.5-minute span late in the third quarter and gave an MJ shrug along the way.
I mean, I don't know. Rui was talking to me about I need to get a three-point celebration, so I didn't know what to do, so I just gave the shrug.
the 9 threes, tying the single-game rookie record. The win extended the Laker win streak to 6. The Cavs finally lose, now 15-1, courtesy of a 120-117 final in Boston. Jason Tatum, 33 points, 12 rebounds, and 7 assists. Men's number one, Kansas, took care of UNC Wilmington, 84-66. Bill Self celebrating career win number 800, while Dan Hurley not celebrating at all after second-ranked UConn only beat East Texas A&M 81-46.
When you've established such a level of play in our program, and we work so hard at what we do as a program, you can have bad shooting nights, but you can't play like that. That's not acceptable.
Again, the final score was 81-46. Hurley called his team's rebounding and ball security comically bad. His team missed 17 of 24 threes and committed 19 turnovers.
When Dan Hurley speaks in a very calm voice, it actually makes me more nervous. Like, he's the kind of guy where, you know, he talks to you like you're like it's a caged animal. Like,
it's like Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
When you play a team, what was it? East Texas?
A&M.
Like, he's at any moment, he's about to just explode. Like, this is the calm before it. It's his calm voice is scary to me.
There was a video, I'm sure EJ and Manny saw it, bouncing around, like, during the preseason for them, where it's like a behind-the-scenes practice video. If you watched it not knowing who he was, you would think that he hated basketball and humans. He is so miserable during this cut-up of practice that I wanted to ask him why he keeps doing this.
No, I bet he's probably like, what? I love it.
Like, just go home, dude.
I've been to practices that his dad was running for high school kids.
Yes.
Intense, man. Intense.
All high school basketball coaches in New Jersey, New York are lunatics. All of them.
It's crazy.
I don't think it's geographically specific.
I think that's just the country.
I think in this area specifically, it is worse.
I don't know. I think you get yelled at in the Midwest.
Yeah.
In California. Okay. I'm sure they're yelling. But it was, yeah. I was like, oh, man, this is... I feel uncomfortable. Kids seem like they're having a good time, though. Bogush, thank you so much. See you guys on the phones. The most disappointing sporting event of all time. And we also had a weird report yesterday. One teammate calling out another. But why? We'll get to it next. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. So on Wednesdays, we do the great debate. Today, we're asking the most disappointing sporting event of all time off of the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson fight. We put the poll question out there with some of our choices. Would you like to know what's in the lead right now, guys?
I would.
Definitely.
Step right up, Mr. Manny Rodriguez. Super Bowl 48, Seattle routes Denver, is leading with 42%. Yes! EJ's selection of Aaron Rodgers' Monday Night Football debut with the Jets is at 34%. My Alabama-Notre Dame flop of the BCS championship game is 13%. And Bogush's 07 Mets collapse is at 11. Perloff, you decided on...
Of course, I went with the game of the century, which was 1946, Army-Notre Dame, throw out the record book, 0-0 tie.
I think people just can't recall it. You know,
wait, it didn't even make the bowl.
It did not.
Probably would have beaten that Alabama-Notre Dame game.
I wanted to put it in the poll. You told me not to put it in. So
No. I just don't think anyone remembers that game. Apparently, you guys have never... You've never heard of Doc Blanchard,
the
Johnny Lujack? No.
The nothing. Other game of the century, though, do you remember Alabama-LSU? And the final score was like 9-6, right?
Very similar. I found that quite disappointing. That was the different century, but yeah.
Yeah, different century. More recent. Andy is in Pittsburgh, has one we have not mentioned yet. Hey, Andy.
Hey, I think the worst is when the Seahawks were cheated by the Steelers in Super Bowl 40 by the refs and everything, and that Manny Rodriguez saying that his was the 48 with the cold weather Super Bowl, that was the best for me because that's when the Seahawks won their first Super Bowl.
And it was never in doubt, Andy. It was never in doubt. That one, from the moment that snap went over Peyton Manning's head and it was a safety, you know, it was going to be a weird game. I don't remember the ref so much from that Super Bowl. I remember it just everything being about Jerome Bettis
being home. Yeah.
Yep.
I remember
in Detroit.
I've never seen a more nervous quarterback than Ben Roethlisberger in that Super Bowl because he was fire in that playoffs. He was amazing on the playoff games leading up to that. He completely, I don't know if he just played badly or he panicked. But I mean, Hines Ward won the MVP. He was the only one who threw a nice pass the whole day.
It's true. Final score was 21-10.
But you're right. I always remember that. I totally remember Jerome Bettis in Detroit. That was like Matthew Stafford and Clayton Kershaw were high school teammates. Like certain storylines are just hammered home. Brian Fitzpatrick went to Harvard. Like enough. We know Bettis is from Detroit.
Quickly before the show is over today, I want to make sure we get to this because I don't think we'll get to it tomorrow, the rest of the week. What the heck is going on with your 76ers, Perloff? There was a team meeting where Tyrese Maxey is calling out Joel Embiid, the former MVP, for being late to meetings. And apparently Embiid accepted the criticism, and it's okay, but Embiid also said that sometimes he's confused about what the 76ers are attempting to execute on the court. He's the focal point of the team when he plays. How can he be confused about what they're doing? What the hell is going on?
I have some numbers. Do you know that Terry McLaurin ran 20 routes against Quinyon Mitchell and got zero targets?
No, it's not Eagles you know time. I asked about the 76ers.
Do you know that Zach Bone is now going to be a Pro Bowl middle linebacker, former defensive edge?
No, you can't turn the page on the 76ers season when you're wearing the 76ers hat.
I wore this intensely. I'm like, this is the last day before they just go three. They're talking about maybe being the worst team in NBA history. Joel Embiid's knee is shot. I mean, what do you want to say? And his attitude has always been garbage, and he's never going to show up in the playoffs. I knew this. I desperately wanted him to be traded to the Knicks years ago just so he could disappoint there.
Well, I don't think your dream's coming true here, Pearl. And this is like, there's so much going on here with the 76ers, and it's all bad. How do you get bad so fast?
I think they're doing a service to their fans by being totally irrelevant. Honestly, like, they have no chance. Yeah, I know I'm kind of half joking, but it almost doesn't hurt because it's such a joke, right? Like that Tyrese Maxey's calling out an MVP and it doesn't sound weird.
It doesn't. I kind of like, everyone loves Maxey and I feel like I love him a little bit more now because he's calling out Joel Embiid for being late. He's not setting the tone at all. Embiid is not. And I think Maxey just went up a notch in everyone's book.
Well, yes, but I don't think anyone cares about the Sixers, certainly not nationally. I think locally it's starting to fall apart because...
Oh, we love laughing at the Sixers. You mistake us. We love laughing at the Jets. We love laughing at the Sixers.
Definitely love laughing at Embiid.
We love laughing at the Dallas Cowboys when we get the opportunity and Jerry Jones.
Nobody loves laughing. People do not care about the 76ers. I really don't think. Even when they're good, how many playoffs in a row have they been? They feel totally irrelevant. And this is just... The funny thing is like nobody's surprised by any of this, right? Like it doesn't feel like a shock. They're one of the worst teams in the league, and somehow even with Embiid, it's like, oh yeah, kind of makes sense. Don't you feel that way? Or
I picked him to come out of the East. I feel like a dope talking about disappointing things of all time. I can't believe that Joel Embiid can't show up because you can't have it both ways here. If you're a superstar, either you don't show up and you're late, but you're so good on the court that people can't like nitpick with you because you're just so talented, or you try to make up for that lack of talent or production by being the team guy and trying to set the tone in other ways. And Embiid's got neither of these things.
I mean, if you watch him play, he's clearly a finely tuned athlete who's 40 pounds overweight consistently. Like, doesn't that speak to work ethic?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I thought.
Look at LeBron. Like,
oh, I know.
You know.
But there's only one LeBron. You know, to hold everyone to the LeBron standard sometimes feels not fair.
Well, Embiid's foe, Jokic, he lost a lot of weight. He dedicated himself to basketball. Embiid just has no interest. He has never had any interest. But my brother, who's in Philadelphia, tells me, like, yeah, people say they see him at fast food restaurants. I don't know if that's true.
Like what, hiding behind like a mountain of hamburgers?
No, you can't hide. I don't know if that's true, but in Philadelphia, people are really down on his attitude.
I mean, this is why the drive-thru exists.
Joel Embiid and that Alaska Bear.
I don't know if that's true, by the way.
Thank you, Manny. EJ, thank you, Alex, Bogish, Kaplan.